Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams, touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown, joined once again by the full crew. With the season back on track, things where they're supposed to be, Vikings get another win after the mollywhopping of the Cincinnati Bengals. As I said, here with the full crew, so I guess we should go through a set of some introductions here before we get right into talking about the beatdown that that happened yesterday. So we'll start with QB1. JR, what's going on, my man?
You know, another victory Monday, now Tuesday, so I'm all good.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We will take that. Miles, everyone's favorite puppy parent, how you doing?
Good, man. I always enjoy a game like yesterday. Felt like they definitely needed it.
Yes, sir. And Saxy Prince. This time, the Saxy Prince jinx finally came to, half came to an end. I guess we round up since it was Teddy, but Yinka went to the game, and he actually got to see a player that he really wanted to see while he was at the game. Saxy Prince, what's going on, man?
There was so much emotions, you guys. I started to cry. And you know how sometimes when you cry, you get that thing in your throat? That's how I felt as soon as he entered the game. No, it was a good win, you know, 34-7. It's the kind of win that we expected from the Vikings, you know. And that we needed to see, you know, a team that you can beat, take care of business. So great atmosphere, great time. I enjoyed the game.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I guess let's get to it. Like Miles was saying before we started this recording, there's really not a lot of analysis we really need to get to. By the end of the first quarter, this game was pretty well wrapped up. The Bengals looked like they really wanted to be anywhere but on the field. And the Vikings did what they needed to do. They took care of their business. But obviously, we're going to get into this a little something-something, and we know, JR, you went back and we're watching some things on film today. So I guess, JR, from your perspective, what were you seeing? What did you take away from this game? For the Vikings, who are obviously a much better team than the Bengals, who look like they were already planning their off-season events.
Just the dominating performance by the Vikings, and that's exactly what we wanted to see. I mean, we expected them to win, but we wanted them to win in convincing fashion, and that's exactly what they did. Completely suffocated the Bengals' offense. Like we were talking before, Andy Dalton's QB rating was terrible throughout the game. I don't know the exact number. I don't remember exactly what you said it was, but it was just
– his passer rating was 27.3, and his QBR was 2.5.
Yeah, which is pathetic. It's just terrible. Some of the decisions he was making throughout the game were just awful. The pick six was inexcusable. Threw it right to Kendricks. The Terrence Newman interception, he threw it the Newman right to Newman as well. So the defense played lights out like we expected them to. The offense was a bit up and down. I would like to see them clean up the penalties. They had a lot of penalties throughout the game, so we'd like to see them play a little bit cleaner. But I thought they executed in spots very well.
Yeah, and Miles, how about you? Because, you know, obviously anyone who follows Miles knows that when game time happens, Miles kind of hibernates from Twitter, social media, and all things, and really keeps his takes to himself as he absorbs everything that's going on in the game. So as you were watching, Miles, what were you seeing there? What was your takeaway? How did you feel about, you know, the Vikings just coming out here and handling their business?
It definitely just felt like one of those games that, like, after the first couple of drives, you know, they're up 17-0 before the first quarter was even over. You just see the cruise control get set, and sometimes you need those kind of games, especially this late in the season. You know, you're a little banged up. You get a few guys back to make sure you're healthy heading into the final stretch of the season. You know, heading into the playoffs. So I felt like yesterday was perfect for that because that's kind of what happened. You started the team started taking guys out like Kyle Rudolph, who surprisingly got to play. You know, went from almost out to doubtful to actually being active on Sunday, and they basically didn't really play him very much. I don't have the snap amount in front of me, but it wasn't very much. Really something you like to see for a guy like Kyle Rudolph, who was able to play and him get back. And then after that, I mean, the defense, like JR said, they suffocated Andy Dalton and AJ Green. And, you know, with Giovanni Bernard being the lead back, you like knew that the run game wasn't going to be very effective against us because, you know, they need more of like a pounding type running back to us. And we suffocated him. Linval Joseph was everywhere. Terrence Newman was – he made my favorite play. I called it during the game. Actually, I was talking to my wife about it. And that interception he had where he shot out like a cannon and jumped in front of the pass from Andy Dalton, you could just tell he's seen that on film and he'd just been waiting for it. And you could just see his eyes light up because the way he jumped that route. So I thought that was really cool. And then everything else, like on offense, I think it was pretty stagnant. Like nothing special. Like Jerick McKinnon had a really great day, but like all those short throws to him and everything like that, he just created himself. You could definitely tell the Bengals didn't want anything to do with this game yesterday. I know Don Mitchell tweeted out that basically she said during the time where she usually see players warming up before the game to get stretched out and everything, she said it was like a ghost town for the Bengals. There wasn't really anybody out there. Everything you need to know, like they were heading into this game just like lose and they got whooped. So that they were expecting that game yesterday and the outcome. Great by the Vikings, though, so you got to love that.
Yeah, man, we'll take all of that. And I guess last but certainly not least, our man on site in the building. What was the beatdown like, you know, live from U.S. Bank, Sexy Prince? What were your thoughts when you took it in live? And then I know that you were watching it again today. Tell us, what are your thoughts? What's your analysis of this whooping, as Miles put it, that the Vikings put on the Bengals?
Yeah, it was just very clear that the Bengals did not want to cover Jerick McKinnon at all. And obviously Keenum made some really good reads as well, but there were just plays where you were just green grass ahead of it and you were really hoping that Keenum would take that, and he did more often than not. And it was just very clear that the Bengals, you know, really a little bit dejected, just weren't really that interested. I did see Pat Elflein, you know, on a few screen passes and whatnot, and it was just clear that, you know, he was missed, you know, the previous week, and obviously his impact has been, I think, a little bit not underrated, but it was just good to see it back in the lineup and see that the Vikings could do a little bit more on their offense with him back in there. You know, as far as, I think I may have said this in a podcast way back when, but like watching the Vikings defense, obviously on TV, you can see it, but live too, you can just tell it's just frustrating. I mean, if I was a quarterback on the other side, I would just be frustrated with, like, obviously how fast the linebackers can close the speed, how much Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter collapse the pocket, the penetration that Linval Joseph will get time and time again. It would just be very frustrating to think that you have something open, or, you know, think that you're going to have time and realize you're going to get pressured, you're going to get hurried, all that stuff. So one play notably was Eric Kendricks. He was on the line. I tweeted out today. He was on the line. You know, he fakes that blitz and then he sits right back into the zone. And it was just clear that Andy Dalton never saw him. Not an easy pick six, but definitely something that Mike Zimmer had dialed up, and Eric Kendricks took advantage of it. So, you know, when I look at those kinds of things on the defensive side of the ball, I just know that seeing it live is just like you just see these guys flying around and being able to get after the ball. And, it's just good to know that we have this great of a defense, you know, even though if we're not compared to the, you know, the Ravens or, you know, the 85 Bears or whatever the case is, I still think this is a fantastic defense.
Yeah, so with that, Prince, obviously, you know, it was a dominating performance from beginning to end. But, you know, I'll start with you on this one. Give me one name on offense, one name on defense. Kind of who are your top performers? Who are the players that, you know, after this game, even with the Bengals kind of, you know, mailing it in and all of that stuff, who are the players that, you know, watching it, you know, live and then again on tape, really stood out to you as the guys who, who was the man on offense? Who was the man on D?
On offense, I definitely would say Jerick McKinnon. Like I said, I know that they weren't really trying to cover him, but the fact that he was just able to make so many plays after the catch. You could just see, even with the amount of real estate, he was still able to get, you know, a few more yards, you know, maybe than the play was designed for. But he's my offensive, you know, stud. And then defensive stud, I would have to go with Eric Kendricks. I mean, he was a lot of times he was just everywhere, ball hawking. He just going after it. You could clearly tell he was kind of diagnosing the play well before the snap even happened. So, yeah, those are my two guys.
Awesome. And Miles, how about you, man? Who are your top performers, one on offense, one on defense?
On offense, I think Prince kind of hit the nail on the head. It was Jerick McKinnon. He just did a little bit of everything yesterday, and obviously the receiving yards, 7 catches, 114 yards. That's, you know, crazy for a running back. So that was really good to see. Great to see him more involved. Defensively, I'm going to go with B-Rob, Brian Robinson. He had 2 sacks. I think he played a lot more yesterday than he might have most other games just because of the way the game went. But I think it was a good thing because he's a veteran leader on that team. And, you know, him being able to contribute that way is important down the stretch because you might need him.
And that's awesome. Even though one of those sacks, I mean, did he even get a hand on him?
He did.
I feel like Dalton just kind of saw him and was like, oh, no, and just kind of tripped on his feet and fell down.
So technically, yes, he got this sack. Right, that's how it works. All you got to do is just touch him.
I feel like you just got to be the closest guy to him is what they said on the broadcast. Like,
is that what it is? Okay.
The closest defender gets him if he falls down and someone touches him or something. So, yeah, he got him. He got him. He was there. And JR, from your perspective, top players, offense, defense.
Yeah, I'll go with Case Keenum, actually. I'll go with him for my offensive player. I'll just be different since we've shown McKinnon some love. And for defense, I'll go Linval Joseph. I thought he played fantastic and was everywhere yesterday.
And I'm glad you brought up, Case Keenum because, you know, obviously we had a bit of a conversation just kind of about how he's reading the field. He obviously missed the potential touchdown throw. I think it was to Carter, who was streaking wide open when he hit Jerick on a play that also probably should have gone for a touchdown if Carter had set a block for him. But, you know, you guys were kind of talking about
– he was pretty salty about it. That's probably what set the block.
Yeah, on the field, he was very, he was jumping up and down, visibly upset. I mean, it's just like, Kyle, but I know you're upset, but like, we trying to score right here. So
it was his
birthday
yesterday, too, so I'm pretty
Man.
So he won.
NFL debut. Yeah, man. Yeah.
He's trying to get that good story on NFL Network.
Yeah, he was hot.
On his birthday.
He was touchdown. Hot.
Okay. But, it begs a question for me. So Case Keenum, I mean, again, it's another game. Stats look fantastic. Only 3 incompletions all game long, 236 yards, a couple touchdown passes, but like 100, and I can't remember the exact number, but like 186, 189 or something like that of his passing yards, 186 of his passing yards came after the catch. Like, when you're looking at a performance like this, and it was a very good performance, so I don't want anyone to think that I'm saying it's not that. Like, what are you evaluating in a performance like this when the quarterback is being asked to do so little? And I'll start that with you, JR, because you played the position. So, like, after a game like this, if your coaching staff put together a game plan where they're really just asking you to do really not much but throw the ball, you know, 3, 4, 5 yards downfield and let your playmakers work, like, what are you evaluating in film study about that type of game plan the next day?
Well, I mean, I don't think you can really hold that against Case Keenum just because, I mean, that's just the type of quarterback that he is, and Pat Shurmur completely understands that. And what you saw with the Vikings did yesterday is they took advantage of the short to intermediate routes. They didn't really take a lot of deep shots, and Case Keenum is kind of like – a short assassin. That's what I like to call it. He's not a guy that's going to go deep very often. He picks and chooses when he does go deep, like he did on the Stephon Diggs touchdown, but he's just going to ding and dunk you to death. And that's what you saw yesterday. He just gets the ball in his playmaker's hands and he lets them work. And that's how Case Keenum operates. He picks and chooses when he does go down the field, but otherwise they're just going to run simple concepts. And he's just going to deliver the ball to them and allow them to make plays in space. That's just how Case Keenum operates. He's not going to make a bunch of wild throws or a bunch of fantastic throws. He's going to take those short, shallow crosses or quick game routes to Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen and let them create in space. And that's what you saw yesterday. He had 236 yards passing yesterday and 186 came after the catch. And that's a credit to Adam Thielen, Jerick McKinnon, and Stephon Diggs just getting them the ball early and getting it to them in space and letting them operate. And we always say he's a product if it's supporting cast, but it's hard to blame him when they're able, when he's able to get the ball in their hands and they're able to make plays. So he really operates, or he goes as well as his supporting cast does. And that's not taking anything away from Case Keenum, but that's just a credit to what they have surrounded Case Keenum with and allowing him to get the ball in those playmakers' hands and allowing them to operate and make plays out in space.
Yeah, man, I guess that's fair. And I feel like at the start of every game, it seems like, you know, Shurmur just gives Case a downfield shot to see where he's at on the day. And if it hits, maybe we go with the deep passing attack. And if it gets picked off or almost picked off like it was in this game, okay, it's going to be a 5 yard in the screen game. And we'll just see how it goes from there as we move on for the rest of things. So, yeah, not taking anything away from Case. He executed the game plan perfectly. But another question, and Miles, I'll start with you on this one. Like, the game went exactly as we expected. It was a beatdown. It was the beatdown everyone thought it should be going in. Vegas, everyone down, said this is what was going to happen. But you did kind of mention, not sure if it was when we were live before or kind of in the group message, that, you know, there were some times in there where the offense did kind of get stagnant. There were some things that were a little sloppy. The offense really wasn't as crisp as it had been, you know, earlier in the season. And so this is maybe the second game in a row where we've had, you know, some comments like that coming out. Is there anything that you've kind of seen maybe in this game or the Carolina game and this game, or maybe taking it back even a game before that, that gives you any cause for concern in terms of, you know, things we might need to worry about going forward that are maybe under the surface that weren't captured in the score?
Definitely. I really think the biggest thing we've been running into against defenses, and they've kind of started to let people like Latavius Murray and even like a Kyle Rudolph be the ones to try to beat us, to beat them, I mean, is that teams are trying to take away our downfield ability. Because, you know, what's made us so successful this season, notwithstanding some of the games that we've won, like Atlanta and obviously yesterday, is the explosive plays, the downfield throws, the plays that the deep throws from Case Keenum to like guys like Stephon Diggs or Adam Thielen, those kind of plays you're not seeing as often. You're not seeing the big chunk plays downfield, and the deep crossing routes, the deep posts, double moves, and stuff like that. You're not really seeing that opportunity from teams. They're making sure that we don't do that because they know when we get into a rhythm like that with like Case Keenum, then it doesn't seem to stop. So I think that's one thing that's really could worry me down the stretch is some of these, you know, better defenses taking our explosive plays away, our downfield plays, and having to rely on, you know, Latavius Murray. You know, and depending on the defense you play, like we saw against a team like Carolina, who has a really good, you know, front seven, is that, you know, that's what they're equipped for. So they could stack the box with their linebackers and their, you know, D tackles and everything and worry about the run while their safeties just could stay back and make sure that there wasn't any, you know, deep play action passes. So I would like to see the play action kind of get a little bit more, be a little bit more effective downfield, but that's probably the biggest gripe I have right now is just the explosive plays don't really seem to be as, you know, there as often lately.
Yeah. And just to put some numbers to that, let's looking at PFF right now at the wide receiver deep passing. If you look over the last 4 weeks, so going back to week 12, there have only been really 9 deep targets to Stephon Diggs or Adam Thielen, and only 1 reception that was to Stephon Diggs for a 20-yard touchdown. So, yeah, like that is a definitely a valid thing, and it's definitely borne out in the numbers that we aren't taking those shots that we were taking.
Well, I just think teams aren't letting us too. They're making sure that we're not being able to take those shots too. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Teams are scheming to make us really have to stay patient and go down the field with the underneath stuff. So, that's definitely something to look at there. I guess, Yinka, from your perspective, because I know that you mentioned earlier today anyway that, you know, the Vikings offense wasn't as, you know, explosive or maybe as crisp as you've seen it in times past. I guess, you know, understanding that, you know, this game probably isn't the best game to really evaluate anything. There were times where it felt like a preseason game out there in terms of, you know, who the Bengals were putting out on defense. But just as you evaluate the Vikings kind of in this game, last couple games, and kind of as we move forward into the playoffs, anything at all that you could see that might give you any cause for concern, or you just really love where things are with this team and feel like we're going to kind of coast into the playoffs?
Well, I mean, as it pertains to getting into the playoffs, yeah, I don't have any concern whatsoever. I mean, Case Keenum, the offense, all that stuff. When it comes to getting into the playoffs, I mean, I've expressed those concerns before. You're seeing it a lot more, so you're seeing less and less of the explosive plays that you saw more so towards the early parts of the season. And, you know, my biggest concern, obviously, when it comes to the offense is we've seen this offense play – you know, essentially majority either with a lead, or if they are behind, they're only slightly behind. You know, I worry that, you know, I'm actually less worried now if Case Keenum, you know, he starts off first quarter not really playing that well, but then he tends to turn it on towards, you know, either the second quarter or the second half, all the cases. You know, I am worried if, you know, if that first half is actually not because of the defense playing poorly, but maybe because Case playing poorly and put him in a rut right away, will he be able to help us to climb out of that? That's really my biggest concern, outside of maybe potentially that kind of coming at the same time of maybe one of those defensive, you know, really weird defensive games where the defense isn't really playing the lights out defense that we know it to be. We've seen that happen a few times this season. But, you know, Case Keenum and the Vikings offense have been able to kind of come out of that. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't want the two things that are our biggest concerns to happen at the same time, because that's what I think will become a problem. If one thing happens, I think the other thing can, or the other side can essentially balance it out. But if both happens, that kind of concerns me.
All right. And I guess, JR, from your perspective, anything that you've seen or anything that gives you any cause for concern or any worry as we move forward in the season?
Not really. I mean, I would like I said earlier, I would like to see the offense cut down on the penalties a bit. But otherwise, I'm completely fine with the way that they have been playing the past few weeks outside of the Carolina game. So let's hope they keep going and carry this momentum into the playoffs.
How'd Mike Remmers look from your perspective, kind of getting back out there, shaking off the rust?
Up and down.
There was rust.
Yeah, definitely. In pass protection, he was a little shaky. But he got better as the game went on. Run blocking has always been his strength, and I thought he looked really good doing that, especially in the red zone. And I think it was the first touchdown of the game. He had a really good block for Latavius Murray to score. So run blocking, he was much better as opposed to pass protection. He was a little rusty in that, but that's expected, especially with the 5-week layoff.
All right. Well, I guess we've talked about, you know, pretty much everything we can talk about in this game that really wasn't particularly compelling. I mean, I enjoyed every minute of it because it was a win for the Vikings. But, you know, it was a game that definitely wasn't compelling. It was so, you know, I guess not fun to watch for people who weren't Vikings fan that CBS decided to just cut the game off for half the country, which obviously made folks a little bit unhappy. But I guess we'll talk about the other thing that happened in this game outside of the Vikings winning, which is Teddy Bridgewater finally got to get on the field and play some football in a real.
Woo!
And, well, I mean, I guess after all that time, we can go ahead and just cut Teddy Bridgewater because, you know, I mean, he threw an interception and, you know, had another pass that was thrown too hard or something. So obviously he's terrible. And all of you Ted heads and Teddy files have been shown that Teddy Bridgewater is awful because he threw, I think, two passes and they weren't caught or something, according to Twitter.com. But anyway, JR, from your perspective, I know that you have a unique kind of view on the whole Teddy Bridgewater thing. You've written about the fact that you and Teddy have kind of have a friendship that you've developed over the time here. So what was your perspective? What were your thoughts? How were you feeling when he was able to get out there and kind of overcome everything that he's had to go through and play in a real game?
Goosebumps, man. That's the only way to explain it. Just seeing him get back out there after just what he went through these past 16 months to get back on the field. And I just don't understand how you couldn't be happy for him. Everybody in that stadium, the fan base, should be happy for him and embrace him no matter what he did in those six reps, I think it was, that he had on the field. He could have thrown six interceptions in a row for all I care. Just for him to get back on the field and a blowout win was great, just overcoming the odds that he had to get back on the field. And a lot of people don't understand what he went through. I don't even understand what he went through. because I wasn't there every single day in his rehab process. He's the only one, and his doctors only are the only ones that understand what he went through. But clearly he was emotional in the Redskins game, just stepping back on a football field, but now actually getting to play in a game is just a phenomenal feat, and credit to him for fighting all the way back and getting back to playing the game that he loves.
Awesome. Miles, how about you, man? What was going on at, I guess, in the Gorham basement when when Teddy got back out there on the field? Were you chanting along with the folks in the stadium, or would that have just confused the dog too much?
Oh, man. So my wife and Teddy were both taking a nap because the game was so boring. And the one thing my wife said was, you better wake me up if Teddy gets in the game. So I start hearing the chants, and I start seeing, you know, Teddy walking down the field, and I like jumped up, and I like scared the hell out of her. And she was like, what's going on? And she's like, Teddy's in the game. So she like woke up, and I woke Teddy up, and he got all excited. And I just stood the entire time, and I had goosebumps, man, because I was just like JR said, like you guys are saying, like, I didn't care what he did. It was just the fact that he was able to get back out there and play again. It was just so exciting. It was so, like, rewarding. Like, I felt rewarded. Like, all his hard work, like, because it's just one of those things, like, you've been going through the process, watching him go through his process and everything, and everything he felt, you know, he had to go through. I can't even imagine. So I'm just so happy for him. I'm just so happy that it was able to happen. You know, this season, I was getting a little worried that maybe it wouldn't. So I'm really glad it did. And it was awesome.
All right. And I mean, I feel like we should just go ahead to end the podcast now. There's no one else here on here who would probably have any opinions on Teddy Bridgewater playing or anything like that. So,
hey, Jason, you know, remember that trip you had sent with Frank Lucas and the gun and stuff? Remember that?
Just playing. Sachi Prince, my man. How's it going?
How Nick is about doing? To give you all the spoilers from Star Wars. Just for the-
I know, right?
How did you feel, man, when you got to see your son, Teddy Bridgewater, get man, out there, you know, get some snaps in a real man, game?
My son is back, y'all. And it was great atmosphere. JR was not lying when he tweeted out, I think I can hear you through the TV. I was in the nosebleeds, so my voice carried throughout the entire stadium. So I started a few of those Teddy chants, not gonna lie. But in all seriousness, the weird thing is exactly how he played. You know, he looked. I tweeted or sent you guys a message. I'm like, Teddy looks a little stiff. And, you know, throwing the interception and, you know, really looking jittery and stuff. That's exactly how I expected to look. And anything else would have been a surprise. I was actually not surprised that, you know, his first throw was an interception. You know, that was my expectation. I didn't want it to happen, obviously. But it was just good to see a guy who's been out of football for 16 months get back on the field. The entire stadium was on their feet cheering, yelling. And they had, at one point on the board, you know, they put quiet you know, the offense is working or whatever, but you could just tell the crowd did not care because Teddy couldn't even hear the play. It was loud. It was just crazy. Everyone was happy. You could see the players really just like going, getting hype and stuff. But it was just great. And, you know, the other side of it is like, yeah, this might be all that we have of this season. When it comes to Teddy Bridgewater, we have the feel good story that's, you know, he got back on the field. He's playing football again after, you know, somewhat being very close to not ever playing again. So I don't want to say this is where the story ends, but, you know, for 2017, this, you know, this is like the final, kind of the final chapter as far as the Teddy Bridgewater story as it pertains to, you know, coming back to football. So, you know, after that, you know, we'll see where it goes, but right now, it was exciting for me. This is my favorite player, but I'm probably excited for the majority of this fan base as well.
Yinka probably, not only was he crying, but he probably had the snot coming from his nose and he was sniffing.
Man, it was like there was so much stuff, like liquids just coming out of all the spot holes in my face, man. Just everywhere.
I feel like, you know, like we just went, you know, we were right there and the line was right there. And then Yinka had to go and just take us just and fall over the line.
Oh, yeah. I'm a perpetual line overstepper.
Yeah, that is true. But Yinka, you brought up some good points there when you were talking about, you know, things with Teddy and how it pertains to really the Vikings and the season. And so, you know, as things were going earlier in the season and, you know, Vikings Twitter on the regular was tearing itself apart with first, you know, Teddy Bridgewater versus Sam Bradford, or, you know, Teddy Bridgewater versus, you know, Case Keenum, and who's the better quarterback, who's the better option for the Vikings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I will even say from my perspective, during that time when we were having those kind of discussions or debates or whatever, you know, the passion in those debates was really, yes, it was about Teddy, but it's really framed more about the team and the fact that, you know, I think that, you know, this quarterback in a vacuum is a better quarterback in a vacuum than, say, Case Keenum. And so if you have the option for that person to come back and play for your team, let's get him back on the field. Let's get the rust knocked off, because he, in the long term, in my view at that point, would give you the best chance for the team to have success. So within the framework of Teddy Bridgewater's comeback, yes, Teddy's a great guy. We want to see Teddy come back. But it was really about, you know, the team and all of that. And so I saw some conversations on Twitter kind of yesterday that, I don't know, didn't make me feel uncomfortable or anything like that, but I wanted to get you guys' opinion on it, because some folks were like, look, Teddy coming back is nice, but I didn't feel anything about it when he went back on the field, because I don't get attached to players like that anymore. And one of the things that someone said specifically was, look, when the Vikings traded away Randy Moss, that kind of like broke me. And since then, I don't really get attached to players that way, because I know that even the best of them are the ones that I love the most could get sent away. And so I cheer for the team, and that's it. It was a nice story. It was a footnote. But now that we kind of know Teddy's not coming back to be like the starter or any of those things, it was just that. It was kind of a footnote. It was a nice thing. And yeah, it's done. It's moved on. Didn't feel anything. So I wanted to get y'all's perspective on that, because people saying something like that, which I felt was a relatively fair take, it brought down the ire of some folks on Vikings Twitter, people telling them to turn in their fan cards and all kinds of other kind of ridiculous things, in my opinion. But I guess I wanted to get y'all's perspective on that. And I'll start with you, JR. Like, if someone's just like, yeah, it was a nice story, but, you know, me personally, I don't care. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, damn alien. That's what I say. Like, how can you not be happy for what he's accomplished? I understand if you're trying to be a macho man, Mr. Tough Guy, I don't have any emotions, but how can you not be happy for all that he's accomplished up to this point? And just if we go back 16 months, the entire story of what he went through, like, if you didn't feel sorry for him or just bad for him about what happened, then you're just heartless to me. Even if I wasn't a fan of Teddy Bridgewater or what happened to him or his play in general, it's hard not to feel sorry for him and what he experienced. And even if you don't like Teddy, if you didn't feel some type of emotion for him yesterday, just stepping back onto that field, you're a damn alien, like I said.
How about you, Miles?
I feel the exact same way. I mean, like there's a guy going through a really similar situation than Zach Miller. And I feel like I don't have any personal like investment in Zach Miller as a person, as a player, whatever. I still feel for that man. Like if he decides and has the opportunity to come back and play football, I will be rooting for him and cheering for him to come back. Just like I kind of hope people were doing the same thing for a guy like Teddy Bridgewater, just because, you know, it's more than just football. It's like their livelihood. It's like, I don't know how you couldn't have any feelings yesterday. And yeah, I don't know how you couldn't have any feelings. Cause like, and for me, for people to really have like the vendetta toward Teddy Bridgewater because of all the, like the love and praise and all of the like God's gift to earth type treatment that he got during this time he's been away from a lot of fans on Twitter, like for you to like change your opinion of a player because other people hype somebody up so much is like completely crazy to me.
Spoiler alert, They didn't change their feelings at all. Those feelings were always their feelings.
You're probably right, but they're using that as an excuse. Openly change their feelings, you know what I mean? So I'm just not a fan of that at all. So I don't know.
And Yinka, what about you, man?
Oh, I got some feelings about this. So I want to eliminate the idea that if a person doesn't care about anything, that they have to somewhat voice that opinion. If I don't care about something, I never have to tell anybody that. I don't have to say anything about that. People don't have to know that I'm not really that big a fan of country music. I can just continue going on with my life, not caring about something. But the problem is that people are actually voicing that they don't want to hear about this story anymore. They don't want to, like, it didn't bring them any joy or cheer. It's because of the fact that they care one way or the other. And more specifically, they care because they don't like the player very much. They don't like him on the field, and thus that extends to not really liking him off the field. For whatever ulterior motives you might have, and we know that it can be anywhere from, you know, more professional to more personal biases that people tend to have on these kinds of things. But for people to say that they don't really care about the situation, I mean, like, you're just lying to yourself. And you know, eliminate the need to have to voice those opinions, because I saw all those messages and I thought
it's twitter.com. I mean, let's be honest, there's really nothing that get we put on twitter.com that needs to be posted up there.
I'm not
people saying stuff that really
it's
doesn't
so but sense. it's so easy to I guess what I'm trying to get at, Jason, is it's really easy to you know, if it's a story that you're really not that interested in, you know, don't read the story. Don't go and engage into it. But the problem is that people do engage into it just to tell everyone else, or even the author, I didn't want to read this. Like the author made the decision for you to force you to read it or hear about the story. It's so easy to escape all avenues of things that you don't want to listen to when it comes to social media.
Oh, no. See, I wasn't thinking of it like that. And so, like, it wasn't about someone going reading an article about Teddy Bridgewater and then saying, like, I'm upset that I read this article about Teddy Bridgewater. It was, you know, Vikings Twitter. And, you know, Vikings Twitter, we can be an emotional group of people. And my whole thing on this is, like, if you are one of those people who is very emotionally invested in the Teddy Bridgewater comeback, as many of us are, then cool. If you're someone who isn't that way, also cool. Like, I guess the thing I don't like is when we get into this thing where you're parsing out, like, if you don't feel the way I feel or respond the way I feel or respond the way I do about something that happens, then you're, like, not a real fan or whatever. Like, I mean, I'm asking the question just because I saw, you know, some pretty aggressive interactions about this thing or this topic on Twitter where someone was just like, yeah, you know, it was cool, but you know, I'm not as hype about it as some other people. And people really were telling that person, like, you can't be a Vikings fan anymore.
No, that's silly. Yeah, that's completely silly, Jason. I was more trying to get at the people who they're almost angry at the fact that he's black playing football. They're angry at the fact that people are talking about their
anger. Y'all hear Yankees Freudian slip right there?
I sure did. I didn't want to say it. I was going to let it go, but I was hoping
you weren't going to bring it up. I'll have to.
We'll edit that.
I'll have to hear back because I don't know what I said.
Not editing that out.
I know.
I'll have to listen to it back because I don't know what I said. But I'm just saying.
You said that there's people who are angry because he's black playing football.
Oh, yeah. My bad. Yeah. That's funny. I'm gonna own it. I'm not even gonna back away from it. But
to do some things, Yankee. You know, these things will happen.
Yeah, exactly. But to your point, Jason. Yeah, I don't think there's any reason for people to be like, I'm upset that you don't feel positively about this. I think there is something to be said about the people who are negative about the situation. Are like, I don't want to see them play football. It angers me that people are happy about the fact that he's back playing football. I think that's what some people were trying to tap into, but obviously it was ridiculous.
Those are the aliens JR is talking about right there.
Yeah, don't care. So, yeah, it speaks to what, you know, like I said, JR was saying, Miles was saying, but if people don't care, then they don't care. You know, they don't care. But I was more trying to speak to the people who say they don't care, who are clearly invested on a negative aspect of it. And those are the people who are just like, you just need to go very, very far away from humans because you seem to not be able to interact with them on a humanly level. So, again, you can not care. That's fine. That's kind of my point. But it's okay to not care. I think it's not okay to feel negatively about this.
Yeah, I think the wildest thing about all of it was there was actually a take on Twitter yesterday where people were saying that it was disrespectful of people to be chanting Teddy. It was disrespectful to Case Keenum for people to be chanting Teddy. And Case Keenum is out there leading a Teddy chant. Like, what? Yeah. Anywho, we've talked about that, I think, all that we need to today. And as Miles really said before we got on here, you know, no need to stress this one out any more than we have to. The Vikings took care of their business quickly. I figure like we can do likewise. So, I guess any of y'all got anything else you want to say about this game or any stuff that you got, you know, in the hopper, anything that you're working on before we wrap this thing on up?
It's Packer week.
Yes, sir. Okay, yeah. One word answer. JR, Aaron Rodgers playing.
I hope so.
Miles?
Yes.
Prince?
Nah, he's not.
Okay. Well, all right. Thank y'all for listening. Once again, my name is Jason Brown, joined by the full crew. Got my man, JR, everyone's favorite puppy parent, wide receiver one, Miles Gorham, and all-time quarterback until JR shows up, Saxy Prince. Thanks for listening. Y'all have a good night.